Fairness Doctrine, Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. on WDIS Norfolk, WNSH Beverly. Chuck Morse, your host, live here at the studio in Norfolk. Patrick O'Heffernan is out on assignment today. He'll be back tomorrow at the usual time. My guest this segment is Michael Bolden, who is the founder of the 10th Amendment Center. Michael, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Chuck, I am honored to be here. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Michael, this the 10th Amendment is one of the lesser-known amendments to the Constitution, and yet its purpose seems basic when you look at it, and that is that it was supposed to be the ultimate check and balance toward federal power. Basically, it states that all powers not specifically enumerated in the Constitution reside with the states and the people, which is the essence of a check and a balance.
It's essential. And in fact, Thomas Jefferson made it clear that it was the bedrock. It was the foundational description of what the Constitution stands for. And what it means is that we, the people, we are the sovereign. We are in charge. And we created the federal government to be our agent for certain enumerated or, as you said, listed purposes. And those purposes are listed out in the Constitution. They're written in plain English, too, so don't let anybody try to confuse you that you need a lawyer to try to explain what the federal government is authorized to do. It was written to be a document that explained to people what their government was going to be doing, and we're all supposed to be able to understand that pretty easily.
You know, Michael, you've touched on one of the pet issues of mine, and in fact, Patrick and I agree on this, Patrick being my liberal co-host, and that is that the Constitution itself is written, as you say, in simple language that could be understood by a high school kid. We believe that all laws debated in Congress, and this is something that should be an internal rule that Congress is perfectly in its prerogative to implement on itself, that all laws that debated in Congress and all resolutions voted on should be no more than 1,500 words, should be written in large font, and should be written in a language that could be understood by a teenager.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And in fact, there's an organization called Downsize DC that it wants to add a law that requires for every bill that Congress wants to force down our throats, they have to cite the part of the Constitution where they're gaining the authority to do that. Unfortunately, I don't really trust federal politicians much to limit their own power, whether they're in the executive branch in Congress or the bureaucrats that are the Supreme Court. Generally, when any government has the ability to determine the extent of its own power, that power is always going to grow.
Speaking of the Supreme Court, there's been a recent Supreme Court decision that I think actually is very much in consonant with the original intent of the Constitution, and that is the throwing out of some of the more egregious aspects of campaign finance laws.
Right. I wish they would have gone much further. Some of our advisors here at the 10th Amendment Center actually take the position that this shouldn't even be a First Amendment issue, that in fact that it wasn't even ruled in the proper, I mean, the end ruling is good that they are throwing out part of this, but on top of it they should throw out more, and that Congress really doesn't have the authority under the Constitution to regulate this type of legislation at all. They shouldn't be involved in any type of campaign finance in any way.
But then, as a matter of public policy, how do you address the possibility that you could have large combines of wealth, whether it be corporations or whether it be unions, basically buying up politicians and sending them to Washington?
Well, you're not telling me that they're not doing this already, because I think they already are. Yeah. And the reality is we have a written constitution with specific rules for a reason, because government is not to be trusted with arbitrary power, basically to determine the extent of its own power, because when they do that, we're in a lot of trouble. If the country believes that they need to have additional authority, there's a proper way of doing that, and it's called amending the Constitution, and it's in Article 5 of the Constitution itself.
And also, I think that inherent in the Constitution is the answer to abuses of power by politicians who might be under the influence of big money, and that is to make sure, and this was a bill that was submitted by Congressman Shadegg of Arizona many years ago, didn't go anywhere, but basically it was simply a bill, and that was done internally in Congress, which is their prerogative, to not vote upon any legislation or aspects of any legislation that did not comport with the Constitution of the United States. In other words, that you can have a big corporation give as much money as they want to a politician to try to get them to pass a special law or give them some kind of a grant or something else, but they won't get it if our politicians aren't able to submit any kind of a rule that would violate the Constitution, which that would.
Right, and Congressman Shadegg was actually the primary sponsor of the Enumerated Powers Act, which I was talking about, which would require them to actually point to where Congress gets the authority to do whatever it may be, whether it's dictate health care choices or regulate gun ownership or many of the other things that they're doing that they should never even be touching.
Now, that's matters such as gun regulation and education and welfare, these were basically issues that were handled by the states, if at all, not by the federal government.
Right, and what's important about that is during the ratifying debate, and I don't want to get into too boring of a discussion of this on the radio,
but
what's important to note is that when people were debating this during the ratifying convention, they were really concerned about how the Commerce Clause or the General Welfare Clause or the Necessary and Proper Clause, these ones that have been twisted around, how they were going to be used. So the people who were advocating for the Constitution, the Federalists, actually gave a pretty long list of powers that were going to be specifically left in the hands of the states, not in the federal government. And they talked about things like health care and regulation of business and all these things that the federal government has taken over today, including education.
Well, you know, oftentimes those who are of a more authoritarian nature will like to hijack words and change the meaning of those words to fit their own vision. And the word welfare is one of those classic examples, because when the Constitution talked about preserving the general welfare, they weren't talking about giving people handouts.
No, not at all. And if we are to have any good understanding of what the Constitution means, like any legal document, if it's going to mean today what it meant at the moment it was signed, we have to understand what those words meant at the time. And words have changed over the years. Welfare meant for general good. It did not mean taking money from one group to another. Regulating commerce among the states did not mean prohibiting commerce like they do now. So what something may mean today is definitely not what it means.
That's right. Not to mention the idea that we wouldn't have a state religion doesn't regulate, doesn't write out the possibility that religious people don't have a right to speak and declare their faith publicly.
Correct, and people should be able to have whatever type of education they want in their local communities or however they decide in their state governments to create that type of a system. It's not about preventing people. The Constitution was about limiting government actions so you could be more free.
Okay, my guest is Michael Bolden. He's the founder of the 10th Amendment Center, 10thamendmentcenter.com. You're welcome to join the conversation here at the Fairness Doctrine. This is Chuck Morse, 508-384-8255, 508-384-8255. Michael, I think one of the primary vehicles that's been used to erode the 10th Amendment and to, in a sense, erode the powers of the states and turn the states almost into provinces in this country is this phenomena of the federal government giving grants, giving block funds, and giving other monies to state and local and even municipal agencies to, in exchange for them, ceding their own power. And I'll give one of the basic examples is education. The local communities no longer have the sovereign right over their own education and determining the methodologies of education, because they accept federal money in order to, to get the money, firstly. But when they do accept that money, the money has strings attached. They have to change their way of doing things. They no longer have control over the nature of the education. And the system has become so insidious, it goes back really to the 1950s, that at this point you've got federal control over almost all areas of our lives.
Yeah, I mean, education is really one of the most difficult things to overcome. I mean, I was raised a good communist like most people in this country.
Yep.
A lot of things that my instinct When I heard of when I first heard of bailouts of airlines years ago, my first instinct was, well, shouldn't the federal government just own the airlines? This is the way I came out of the public school system. And when you go to government-run schools, especially federally-run schools, you're going to be learning in some way that every problem needs a government or a federal solution. And whether it's No Child Left Behind or these new Race to the Top funds or whatever it may be, this is all about controlling. This is bureaucrats far away telling your children what's good for them.
And yet the system has become so top-heavy between the grants, between the public unions, which I think are some, which again, they're government employees paid by taxpayers, and a public sector that is now up to 4 million people, that we're becoming almost a house divided amongst ourselves. You know, we've got the public sector, federal, state, and local, but the states and the local municipalities tend to imitate the federal, versus the productive individual and small business owner.
Yeah, it really makes a difficult situation. I think that's why so many people are gravitating towards this, what some people are calling a state sovereignty movement or a 10th Amendment movement. So many people are calling on state governments to simply get some backbone and say no to federal diktats and federal mandates. There was a bill in Oklahoma this past legislative session that was going to make English the formal language on all documents, like at the Oklahoma DMV. They get a threatening letter saying, you're violating the Civil Rights Act and you're going to lose all kinds of funding. And this is the type of attitude that the federal government has in everything. They take money from you in the first place, and then they use it to bribe you in the long run.
Well, that's right. And this is an example of what happens when the state or the local governments take money from the federal government, when they do decide to exercise their own prerogatives, they suddenly find out that they can't.
Right. And there are some courageous legislators in states around the country right now. Already in three states, there's a bill that's been introduced called the State Sovereignty and Federal Tax Fund Act. I don't know if it has a lot of hope in Georgia and Washington State or Oklahoma, but basically what they're proposing is to say, well, all federal tax monies collected from people in the state, if this bill passes, say Georgia, so all federal tax monies would be paid to the state, and the state would basically withhold them from the federal government unless the federal government followed the Constitution. But that's the type of thing maybe in the long run that's going to be needed to deal with this bribery issue.
So, Michael, on a practical level, you guys at the 10th Amendment Center are bringing up public awareness. Is this a behemoth that can be slain?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I have real hope, not like the hope and change that we've been getting.
Right.
What I do know is that if we don't make an effort, we know what's going to happen. The march towards totalitarianism and tyranny is fast upon us, and if we don't stand up at every turn, we're going to get it for sure.
And I just hope that it doesn't become a sort of a situation analogous to Atlas Shrugged in Ayn Rand, which I'm sure you've read.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the reality is like I was saying, we really need to do something. And Thomas Jefferson and James Madison actually gave us strong recommendations on what to do when we were in a situation where two or more branches of the federal government were, in essence, conspiring against the Constitution and your liberty. And that is to go to state governments to have them stand up to protect your liberty, to protect your rights to own a gun, to protect your rights to be able to choose what type of health care provider to contract with whoever you want. And that's their most solemn duty in the state governments.
Well, you know, I think that people are starting to get this message, and one of the pieces of evidence that I point to is the election of my good friend here in Massachusetts, Scott Brown.
Mm-hmm.
That, of all places in Massachusetts, viewed to be the most left-wing authoritarian state in the union, Ted Kennedy's seat, and Scott Brown comes out of nowhere, virtually unknown outside of his small Senate district, and takes it resoundingly, thumps the opponent.
Right, and you've got other people even on a more local level, like Jeff Perry. I think he's in the 5th District, who has introduced a 10th Amendment resolution there in Massachusetts. And while that's probably a very difficult proposal to get through, even a non-binding resolution, there are people who want this, and that election shows that people want to decentralize power away from the central government. They don't want Washington, D.C. to dictate everything.
Yeah, I should look into that. Send me a note on that. I'll have him on the show.
Oh, yeah, Jeff is fantastic. In fact, he's done some articles, and he would be really good. I'll definitely send you the info.
And I know that the governor of Texas has recently threatened to declare, I'm against this, but he said he wants to secede from the union.
Well, I think that was kind of a distorted, and any time someone even hints at something like that, they're going to get attacked by the establishment media. I believe his statement last April was, in essence, hey, if the federal government keeps doing this, I don't know what the people of Texas may want. He wasn't saying that he was going to dictate, but I guess the reality is if the people of a certain state want to do something, as long as it fits within that document of the Constitution, they should really be able to do that. And if the federal government is not following it, well, sometimes people say or look to more desperate measures.
That's right. And, I'm against secession from the union, but at the same time, you have to understand the underlying concerns that are there, which is that states have lost their sovereign rights. They're becoming like Canadian provinces. They're no longer really governing entities of a republic, which is what they were supposed to be.
Right, and as James Madison said, the powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined. It's what's in the Constitution. And those left with the people themselves or their state governments as they choose are numerous. They're almost indefinite. We can basically do whatever we want within the states other than those few things, primarily in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, that we authorize the federal government
to. That's right. I mean, it has to only comport with the amendments to the Constitution and the Constitution itself. And that includes such things as marriage and abortion and some of the thorny social issues, which I think should be state determined as well.
Absolutely, whether it's gay marriage or even like a health care program. The Constitution prevents the federal government from enacting a socialized health care program. And while I'm opposed to socialism at all levels, if a state would enact something like that through their legislature, it's actually authorized by the Constitution. And the reason that's a good thing is because you really much quicker can learn what does well and what doesn't when you have multiple areas trying out different things.
Okay, tremendous. Now, I'm looking at your website. You've got it looks like you really have here a national organization. You've got state organizations. You've got you've got the makings here of a significant political national movement.
Well, we're seeing a lot of people from the Tea Party ranks, the loose affiliation of people who are basically saying, we don't want more and more government. We've had plenty of it already.
You mean the teabaggers? Yeah.
A lot of them are really catching on. The idea of the 10th Amendment, as we've been talking here, the principles behind it are simple. It's just that we've all gone through these government schools for so many years, and we don't really realize that the federal government is really not supposed to be doing just about anything that it does today. And it's a really good, strong, resonating message that people are catching on with. We've just recently started setting up state chapters around the country, and have set up 15. And we expect to have the entire country filled with 10th Amendment advocates in the next year.
Well, I admire your work, and I think that this is something that's it's bigger than maybe you or I even can imagine. I mean, and I'm saying that because I'm still riding a euphoria here in Massachusetts. I can't believe what's happened.
And when masses of people stand up for what they believe in, they get more and more confidence to continue doing that, and I don't think anyone can really guess what could be next.
Well, you know something? If it can happen here, it can happen anywhere, and I think it's going to happen plenty of places as we move toward the November election. People have rejected. In Massachusetts, it was a clear mandate. I think it's being underreported nationally in that both candidates were very articulate in their positions, and they really drew a sharp contrast. So people were voting for Scott because of his positions. I mean, this was, he created what politicians and what candidates for office are supposed to create, a very set agenda of ideas that he would represent, and they are very much in line with what we're talking about.
You know what I found most interesting about that race was Martha Coakley. Last year, she made some noise, maybe not a lot of it, talking about that the 10th Amendment only authorizes the federal government to do certain things and that gay marriage is a state issue. Well, she's right about that. But why isn't she principled enough to actually stand up for that across the board? It really is going to take people who have principles no matter what the issue. And maybe that's why she lost so
Well, I mean, she was just – I mean, she might have been right on that issue in terms of the little lip service, but it was just the classic big government, you know, approach. Everything was a quote-unquote investment in our future, which is a euphemism for taxes.
Right. Well, that's why it's essential for people, whether it's people or politicians, to always look to the Constitution and say, where did you guys get this authority to take my money and give it to General Motors or to Goldman Sachs? Or where did you get the authority to require me to buy a certain health care plan or face a fine or arrest somewhere down the line? Where do you get the authority to do that? The bottom line is, for most things that they do, they don't have that authority.
No, they don't. Michael Bolden, I want to thank you for joining me. Let people know how they can log on to your website and how they can reach you.
It's 10thAmendmentCenter.com. They can go there, find tons of research videos, articles from constitutional scholars on everything. There's a featured article there that rebukes really the top arguments in favor of health care by a top scholar. So I recommend that people go to the website and just check out everything on there.
Michael Bolden, founder of 10th Amendment Center, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, sir.
All right, you bet.